Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the best horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condo with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr. Ben Errington. Mr. Ben Errington, how's it going?
It's going all right, mate. How the devil are you?
So I've had a long day and a peanut butter sandwich. So all bets are off. No idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, you look very snug as well. I'm going to guess. I'm going to guesstimate these layers. There's at least three I could see visible.
I think I've got two t-shirts on as well. It's like two degrees, and I think I can sometimes see my breath.
You can sometimes see your breath.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not good, but you've been banished to the garage.
I am. Yeah. But it's good here, man.
I'm joking. I may not have been banished. I could do what I want, mate. Yeah. If I want, I could smoke 12 cigars in a row. That'd take a long time, but.
At a time in a row. If you want to,
you could down a whole bottle of Lambrini.
I was planning to, right after this podcast.
Why not during?
What about you? How are you? Have you had any peanut butter? You got any Pepsi Max?
Pepsi Max. I haven't had any peanut butter for a while, you know. Although I did have like some sort of peanut butter dessert recently. I had like peanut brittle on it.
What? Okay.
Yeah, it was delightful. It was like a tub or something. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't quite ice cream, but I had peanut brittle on the top and you had to crack into it. And eat it, but I ate it in about 14 seconds.
That's delightful. Like the Milky Bar yogurts. Like they taste so good, but they're gone so quick. Why they taste so good, like because you know it's fleeting.
Yeah.
Like Milky Bar. One night stand.
The Rolo ones are pretty good as well. Yeah. One night stand.
They go in like one spoonful as well for me.
I can eat them in one spoon. Yeah, because you get one spoonful, which is like the main.
Yeah, and then hundreds of tiny spoonfuls. You're trying to get like the little bits off the bottom. Yeah,
I'd rather find a way of just like getting every bit of content from that pot into my mouth in one go without having the need.
Maybe you can squeeze it like Popeye and just get it all in. But Kat does like a death by a million cuts sort of approach, where she'll have like a tiny, tiny little bit on a spoon, and it will last for hours. But she just because she wants.
Is anyone getting pleasure from that?
Well, yeah, she wants to sort of extend the. But I think the more in my mouth at the same time, the more intense.
I think just eat like a multi-pack of them.
Yeah, that's for one person. That should be right.
Yeah, there's like four in a pack. I mean, I'll eat that one go. Screw it.
Yeah, and I won't have any regrets either. Like sometimes you eat some stuff and it's like, I probably shouldn't. But no,
I did. I probably shouldn't. I'm just going to close my eyes and not look at the ingredients and how much.
Or the mirror.
Or the fat. or the mirror ever again.
Yeah. Well, it's Oscar period. It's the period of Oscars. People are doing some Oscars. I don't really follow these sort of things.
I don't really follow Oscar.
Like, are you the kind of person who watches the awards and stuff?
I quite like the Oscars. I mean, I know it's thought of as being a bit of a love-in for a various group of the Hollywood elite. Yeah. But still, I kind of enjoy it because I think it sometimes it does. shine a light on various films that I like it simply because it gives me the chance to go, oh, I haven't seen that. So out of the eight Best Picture nominations, I've seen five this year, which is pretty good going. So I've got a few more to catch up with. But I think it's pretty good because obviously Black Panther's got a nomination, the first Marvel superhero film to get like a Best Picture.
You know, I don't think it's the best Marvel film. If any Marvel film was going to get that, I wish it was a better
Soldier.
Yeah, Winter Soldier or something like that, yeah. There's some great ones.
So, yeah, I guess I wanted to bring up the Oscars just to discuss the lack of horror in the nominations and what that means and why, I guess. I guess, like, the obvious omission would have been Hereditary and perhaps Toni Collette's performance and possibly the screenplay and possibly the cinematography for both of those films, which I thought were both pretty good. But yeah, they've not been included. I don't think they've got many awards from the big ones like Golden Globes and BAFTA and anything like that. Yeah. I'm sure of like if there are any horror awards. Yes, I think A Quiet Place has received an award, possibly for sound.
That kind of makes sense. Like the lack of it.
Yeah.
The less sound, the more chance you've got of winning.
Yeah. So I think so. It receives an Oscar nomination for best sound editing.
Mm.
A Quiet Place does. So a lot of websites are saying, you know, Toni Collette snubbed, but I think you kind of guess who was going to get the nomination based on what has come previously, even in the Critics' Choice Awards, Golden Globes and stuff like that. So Toni Collette hasn't been nominated for those. So for her to be nominated by the Academy is probably. Yeah. But I'm reading here on the Blood Disgusting website. This is one of the most vicious snubs in recent history.
I wouldn't say. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know if it's vicious. I always feel like, are these things vicious? Because people get snubbed, but then someone else, you know, someone else is going to have to not get a nomination for that person to get one.
And then
Lady Gaga's been nominated.
Yeah.
Is that horror?
You like that film, A Star Is Born?
I like that film. I think as time's gone by, maybe I've gone...
You've cooled off.
I've cooled off on it a bit. Yeah. But yeah, Rami Malek's been nominated for his portrayal of Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody, which is lovely. Loads of nominations for Black Klansman, which is my film of the year for last year, including Best Supporting Actor, Adam Driver, which I thought he was great in that film. But Spike Lee, Best Director nomination, Best Picture. All pretty good. But yeah, a glaring omission for horror. What do you think should have been included for horror, or if anything?
Well, I mean, there's the alternative. Fangoria magazine have got their Chainsaw Awards. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Have you been through and voted? It's quite fun to see. Yeah, it's good.
But I think maybe I should. Are votes still open?
Yeah. If you just go on the Fangoria Twitter, it's near the top of the page there. But, you know, there's what I got here for best wide-release movies. We've got Halloween by David Gordon Green, Hereditary by Ari Aster, Overlord, Julius Avery, A Quiet Place, John Krasinski, and Upgrade is in there as well by Lee Winnell.
Oh, yeah.
So there's loads of cool stuff here. Fangoria, you know, it's where horror fans sort of go to a fair bit. So I think for us, I mean, it'd be nice to sort of see
people get
celebrated here.
Cool. I think I'll go through that and put some votes on, maybe put some stuff on Twitter as well. I think I've seen most of the films that are listed here.
Well, so I was going through and it reminded me a lot of our top 10 list. A lot of them do sort of feature.
We got our fingers on the pulse, man.
There's a thing in here about the film we're talking about today, which I picked as the best thing of that category. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I'll let you know what it is in a sec.
You better let me know. Have you watched anything this week?
Yeah, so I popped in. I've got a Blu-ray of The Howling. Joe Dante's The Howling. Have you seen The Howling before?
Nice. I think so, but again, not for a long time. That's a classic.
So it came out around the same time as An American Werewolf in Paris, London, even. I beg your pardon. And both of those sort of are in what they say like the top three werewolf movies, along with Wolfen. But I don't think Wolfen is necessarily a werewolf movie. But so it's directed by Joe Dante, who did Gremlins. So it's still got a sort of Gremlins-y feel, but it's a lot more mature than that. The special effects are by Rob Bottin, who who did the special effects in The Thing. So in this film, it's kind of sleazy in some way. It starts off a bit sleazy because there's like our main character is getting obscene phone calls and stuff from a werewolf, and then he invites her to
not in werewolf form, right?
No, I don't think so. Because there's a lot of like half and half in like transformations in this. But so she goes to meet him in a pawn shop, but she's a reporter, and then she doesn't get bit, but she sees a bit of him or something. He gets shot, and to overcome this sort of traumatic experience of being hounded by this wolf, she goes to like a retreat for people who are in similar positions. Little does she know that everyone in the retreat is actually a clan of werewolves who I don't know if they're there to eat her or if they're there to try and turn her. It doesn't really become very clear. But it's the transformation scenes are amazing. Like, I think they're better than an American Werewolf in London.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
There's one bit where like a werewolf gets his arm cut off, and then you just stay on this arm, this werewolf arm, for about 3 minutes, and it bubbles. Like, you know the Gremlins effects? They always kind of bubbled and popped and stuff. It does a similar thing to that, but then it just suddenly magically turns into a human hand that's still sort of moving around. I was like, "What? How did they even do that?" It's very, very cool. But the special effects, so it's almost like they said they knew that this was their money shots, and they do go on, but you just can't look away. It's about 10 minutes just looking at a guy's face that's like, you know.
Now I'm looking at some screenshots from it. I don't think I've seen it. So it's early 80s, right?
81, I think, yeah. But it is great. I think I prefer American Werewolf in London's tone and comedy and or like the sort of London stuff.
Is this more like straight up horror then?
It starts off like a bit more even cold and sleazy, a bit more Cronenbergian in a way. But then about halfway through, it's almost like Joe Dante decided to just Gremlins it up. And everyone starts turning into wolves, and you know, the craziness happens. It goes a bit Gremlins too. Not wacky, wacky, but it's a bit sillier.
Would you recommend it then? Because I'm quite a big fan of the old werewolf genre, and the fact that I haven't seen this might be a bit.
I think just for special effects,
a glaring omission.
Yeah, yeah, I felt like the same. I felt the same way. So I'm glad I filled.
So what did
hole.
you got it on Blu-ray? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'll bring it down to you.
Oh, cheers, mate. Yeah. Bring it down to me. Give it to me, and I'll go. See you later, mate.
What about you? What about you?
Be gone.
Any gifts or anything?
Well, I haven't really watched all that much. I've started the new series of True Detective, which is good, dark, brooding, very immersive, twisty, turny. Great, great stuff. Obviously, a new cast.
How's it compared to season one?
It's a nice story. I think it's very similar to season one. It's gone for a very similar tone, obviously, very different characters. But I think they've gone back to their roots. They tried to recreate something from the first series. Because obviously, a lot of critically, the second series didn't hit home. I like the second series, but not quite as much as the first.
I rewatch it. I think I've seen it 3 times now.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, it's great. It's great, and there's loads of iconic moments in this, and the script is great as well. I highly recommend that. I also saw Glass this weekend. M. Night Shyamalan's final part to the unexpected trilogy, I guess.
Yeah. I've heard you know, not fantastic things about it.
Yeah.
But I can kind of see that coming because, I mean, Split and Unbreakable, you know, had a long time to develop and they were completely separate. Mm. And then this Glass came along and it was, what, like a year? And it just seems to pop out.
It happened really quickly.
The tone doesn't seem to quite have the, like, isn't as maturely put together as...
It feels like it leans too heavily now on the comic book. So obviously it was trying to create a superhero comic book film. It's so grounded in reality that you know, it is almost shocking that the subject matter is about superheroes and stuff. Now they kind of just start leaning heavily on the fact that, hey, this is a superhero film. This isn't a comic book, you know. There's that too much. And I just found it to be underwhelming, frustrating, great performances, particularly from James McAvoy and Samuel Jackson. I think Bruce Willis kind of fades into the background a little bit, which is ironic considering that's what his character is kind of all about. But I think it's the atmosphere isn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The twists were, it wasn't I saw them coming, but they were just like, eh. Yeah. An ending, which is like nonsensical, really. And I've seen the ending slated a lot. It kind of just feels like, oh, God, what a load of nonsense.
What a load of dog eggs. Yeah.
What a load of dog eggs. So, yeah.
Okay.
I think it cuts off the potential of what could have been.
Yeah.
You know, a really good trilogy. But it just feels like it promises something that's really grand scale, and eventually it all kind of plays out in a very simple and almost rushed way, I'd say.
That's a shame.
It's worth a watch if you enjoy the other two, definitely. It's nice to round off everything.
Yeah.
And being familiar with these characters, seeing them on screen again is enjoyable. But I just think, other than that, it did little for me.
Okay. I think I will watch it, but I'm not... Like I said, I could just kind of... Something about the advertising and stuff just never really sold me anyway. So
yeah.
we'll wait till it's on Netflix or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, so should we crack on with today's film?
Sure. Sure so thing.
It isn't on the IGN Top 100. It is a new release. Came out last year, but it's just popped onto online streaming and digital. It is the remake of Suspiria. Have you got some deets?
Man's got the deets. So Suspiria. Oh, well, that's a good start.
So that's his review.
Suspiria is a 2018 supernatural psychological horror film directed by Luca Guadagnino.
Sure.
I mean, I've ruined that. Inspired by the 1977 Italian film of the same name, directed by Dario Argento. So it stars Dakota Johnson as an American woman who enrolls at a prestigious dance academy in 1977 Berlin that is run by a coven of witches. That's like that's thrown into the plot pretty quick, sharp, isn't it? The coven of witches in the original.
Within the first 2 minutes, I think. What's the name starts talking about it?
Yeah, so obviously spoilers here for this film, but also spoilers for the original, the 1977 Italian film of the same name. So, here's another brief note. Darkness swirls at the center of a world-renowned dance company, one that will engulf the artistic director, an ambitious young dancer, and a grieving psychotherapist. Some will succumb to the nightmare, others will finally wake up.
Okay, so this movie is insane. It's got 64% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is a little bit harsh, but I can also understand sort of why it's a little bit difficult for, you know, people to accept as a film. But because it's just so, the original Suspiria is all like bold colours, like big strawberry jam and blueberryade flavours. Walls and stuff.
Blueberryade.
Yeah.
Flavored walls.
But then this film's like, well, let's go bold in everything else but the colour. Like the special effects, like the dancing is insanely sort of in your face. The horror really is grotesque, but in a sort of fantastic way. Everything's so, and even the plot is so thick and sort of like bombastic in a way.
Viscous.
Yeah, some viscous plot. It's heady. It's like a really thick custard. It takes a lot of sort of digging into to get to the pie.
Yeah, and you feel like you're sinking into it. If we're going to stick with this. Like, imagine a man lying on a giant custard tart, right? Just imagine that.
Yeah.
Lying on it, and he's slowly sinking into it, just like, God, he can't really move.
And if you panic, you sort of ruin it, like because you're like, no, I don't like this.
Yeah, so you've got to just
let it
happen. Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember that Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah.
Sinking into the black, viscous liquid.
That's this film. Yeah.
It's like that. It gets into all your... can't breathe.
So, how did you feel? Like, what were your initial sort of thoughts about it?
I think like everything that came before. So this was a film that I somehow missed at the cinema because I was really looking forward to it. Everything I saw of it, trailers and clips and artwork, just really got me sort of hyped for it. I did enjoy the original, but this looked like a totally different take on it. So a remake, not so much, more like I've read somewhere, I'm not sure if it was director who said this or maybe Tilda Swinton, who said it was more like a cover of the original rather than a direct remake or reimagining. It was like a cover of the original. So the director was putting his own spin on it in such a way. And I guess the setup is the same. Obviously, a lot of the elements are the same. But yeah, the colour is gone. It's very washed out. It's very glum.
Yeah.
Very grim looking, isn't
very
it?
Very European.
very European, exactly. Yeah. A lot of German spoken.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just, there's something about this which was, it was like picking a scab. We're going to do another analogy here.
Yeah.
It was like, so you're picking away at a scab. It's like, oh, bloody hell, I can't quite get in there. And it's like, God, I'm making it worse. But you keep picking away. And sometimes you're a bit like, am I enjoying this? Is this a nice experience? And other times you're like, this is a really satisfying experience.
Yeah.
I think there's loads of good performances throughout. I think the music initially, because it's strange, because I've been listening to the soundtrack, obviously on its own, without the film accompanying.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
For so long that it was strange to now hear the music in the context of the film, to the point where I was a bit like, it's not what I expected it to be.
Yeah.
Especially with like the main theme when it happens over the sort of start of the film and some other songs that happen at very poignant moments. It was the only way I can describe it is like it was unnerving. It felt wrong. It felt wrong, but like you come away from it and when you're reflecting on what you've seen, it's a bit like I feel like it was great.
So it's one of those ones that's, there's so much to it. I'm not too sure if it's a masterpiece or a masterplops. I just don't know yet. But I feel like with time, with a little bit of distance, I might look back on it. But it was a long film, so I think that's one of the things that sort of plays against it.
Yeah, it was long, but I think it's going to be divisive as well, because it's been compared to like Mother as being like a divisive film where some people are going to walk away saying that's utter shit. Other people are going to walk away saying, well, yeah. I think that's laden with so many messages and vision and imagery that, I mean, I think it's a better film than Mother, personally. It might be unfair to compare the two.
I think I need to watch Mother again. But in it, like just the tone and what they were going for with this, I feel like it resonates with me more than Mother did initially. Mother rubbed me the wrong way initially.
Yeah. Mother, you've rubbed me the wrong way again.
You just brushed my hair against the grain. Son. Yeah.
Yeah, there were so many bits in this where I was a bit like, I was watching scenes, and it wasn't necessarily particularly horror scenes.
Yeah.
There are some dance scenes, or there are some other scenes where I was like, kind of just cringing, waiting for something, you know, horrific to happen. Not necessarily like a body horror moment or just something that was like out of left field.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's spooky, man. So it's spooky, this film.
Even thinking back, like, I'm not completely sure what happens in the film. Like, I had to watch a couple of like explainer videos afterwards through it a bit with me.
Because it's definitely a film where you can kind of make your own mind up about it. But at the same time, that might not be necessarily what even happened.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So sometimes I like to watch those videos to kind of like, not to confirm what I was thinking, but kind of maybe like nudge me in the right direction sometimes, because it's easy to get confused.
Yeah. Well, should we have a little dig into the meat of the story? So, well, key players, Dakota Johnson is Susie Banyan, who is pretty much doing exactly what the main character from the original did. She's a dancer from America. She's arrived in Berlin and she wants to dance.
She's ready to throw the shapes, basically.
Yeah. Tilda Swinton plays Madame Blanc, who's the head dance instructor, but she's also a witch on the side. And
yep.
She also plays two other characters, which I don't think it even tells you at first that she's playing them, but at the same time I kind of feel like, what did that add, what did that bring to the film, or what does it mean, I guess, maybe more. Dr. Joseph,
she was on it, she was just like, oh fuck this, I'll play three characters, you mugs.
Busy. Yeah, she played Dr. Joseph Klemperer, who was a psychiatrist,
and allegedly she wore a prosthetic penis while she played him. I'm not even joking. You think I'm joking, but I'm not.
No, I believe you. I could tell, really, to be honest. she also plays one of the other witches, Mother Helena Marcos, who looks like she's going to grow up to make costumes for the Incredibles at some point. She's got that, whatever that woman's called, you know what I mean? The glasses.
Exactly.
Mia Goth plays a sort of secondary protagonist, in a way. Again, her character follows very much what, I guess, her original character did in the original film as well. And there's a smattering of other characters, other people.
So there's loads of witches.
Load of dancers.
Or like dance teachers. There's a load of dancers. It's a very, very female-heavy cast. I think we get like maybe like two male characters, like some policemen in it at some point later.
And they get embarrassed. Like,
and they get ever so embarrassed.
Yeah.
But yeah. So what do you what do you think that means? What do you think the cast is like pretty much entirely? Were there any male characters in the original?
Yeah. Udo Kier is a guy. There's a blind piano teacher, piano player, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
There's a few people. But this, so this is weird because it's all female, apart from those two policemen who only appear briefly, really. And then there's Tom York singing over him all. I'm a man.
I'm a man. Can't you tell I'm a man by my voice?
Yeah. Men are better. Yeah. But it's,
I mean, it is like, I mean, Tom York's music is like mesmerizing in this film. So it's like, it's not a horror score.
No, not at all. Well, the Fangoria category I sort of voted for, Tom York's soundtrack is the best soundtrack of the year for me. I do think it's
closely
fantastic.
Followed by the Halloween score, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome. Yeah. But yeah, it's not necessarily a horror score, but it is just really mesmerizing.
And every now and again, it sort of does. I think there's one bit where they're dancing and he sort of plays on the original Goblin jingles. You know, I don't know how it goes off the top of my head. You just, you know, picture it. You know. You do the work.
Bow. Yeah, some of the weird, like, prog rock. Electro.
Something like that, anyway. So the story's told in a five acts and an epilogue, I think, off the top of my head. Act one is all about, we start off with Chloe Grace Moretz, who is running away. I think she's,
yep.
She, at one point, she says, they've taken my urine. Is this said, like, the hell, they gave me sleep and now they're taking my urine?
And I've taken my urine and they've taken my hair. I'll be like, Jesus Christ, doesn't seem like a fair trade.
No, yeah.
Taken my urine. Yeah. Am I at least able to pee it out myself? Or is it just
And I think she did, and then she saw them going into the toilet after her and come out with like a.
Come out with like a,
you know, like
plastic bag.
A petrol.
Plastic, yeah.
Just like a plastic.
Someone siphoned out the toilet.
Yeah. she's basically explaining to Dr. Joseph Klemperer, the psychiatrist, there's a ton of witches in that place and I'm getting out of here.
I'm getting out of here, fool.
I think she disappears again, but she gives him her notebook, and it's full of stuff. We get like all diagrams about witches and witch hierarchies. Madame Blanc's name keeps popping up in there. Madame Marcos, who's we don't know too much about yet.
And there's a whole load of them, and they all got their finger in the witchy pie.
Yeah. So then we get to what's her face? Susie pops up.
Yeah.
She joins the academy. It's raining, just like it was in the original film.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very similar. It's proper run down and grey and miserable, doesn't it? This dance academy, really. Did Patricia in her diary also mention like the three mothers? There was like detail of the three mothers. So Mater Tenebarum.
Tenebarum, who's
Lacimarum.
Yeah. And
Suspiriorum.
Which so it links into Dario Argento's original trilogy, the Three Mothers trilogy, Suspiria Tenebrae, and one that isn't called Lacimarum. I can't remember what it's called.
Or like the Book of I don't know.
Yeah, so one of them. Yeah, so that kind of thing.
It's called something like something that. Of something. Should have done our research, mate.
Yeah. But so right away, so Susie wants to audition to be in this really fancy dance academy. Yeah. And we don't really know why she's there. But as she starts to dance, right away, it's not like normal dancing. It's not like dancing in, you know, Liquid or Mosh or like a, you know, your standard Friday night dance off.
Yeah.
It's.
It's very, it's expressionistic. It's
a bit of a rain dance sort of feel to it.
Abstract. It's like humpy. Odd. It's like to the most humpy. It's to the most like minimal music as well. Like it's not like there's no percussion. There's no there's no beat as such. It's very like very strange.
They do the body popping and
there's a lot of body popping. There's a lot of lying down on the ground.
Line dancing as well.
Arms doing line dancing. They do the floss.
Yeah.
At one point.
Do it all. But right away we get the feeling that, which I feel like this film really nails something that the original didn't, is that dancing is the way they sort of cast spells, like in the sort of way that rain dancers used to do to get rain. The way they move sort of affects the world around them. And it's an interesting sort of take on witchcraft and witchery and stuff.
Witchery craftery.
And Susie does a couple of moves and Madame Blanc pops in. It's like, yes. And she did the old Simon Cowell. What, press the not the X.
I don't like it. I love it.
Yeah. And then it gets like a little backstory of Susie, you know, tragic upbringing and all that.
Tragic upbringing.
A bit more tragic.
Passed away in a. Is she from Ohio?
Yeah.
She's from Ohio. Lived on a farm. For some reason, she loved a bit of Berlin. We get like a. Get like a flashback and she's writing something and she's written the word Berlin down.
I love Berlin. And then her name next to it.
Yeah.
she's crushing
and her mum's
Berlin.
Like, who's this bloody Berlin then? She's like, it's a wonderful place. Mental.
So, and then since she's in, so Patricia, she ran away from the dance troupe and Susie, she's done a couple of moves and she's in. But it's not like she's just in. They're like, whoa now.
Whoa,
she's
man.
She's really rocking something here. And so I guess they just, what happens now, so they just...
so there's a character called Olga who sort of gets into as a bit of a Barney with Madame Blanc in front of everybody. I think she's kind of like annoyed with her because she thinks she had something to do with Patricia going missing, and Madame Blanc's like, oh, Patricia pissed off to join a, what'd she say, like a rival group or some. Well, red, like an army or something.
So there's the whole Berlin Wall thing happening. And she's going to be like a revolutionary or something.
Yeah. But then Olga just says, oh, you're all slags. You're all witches.
Well, she gets the face on. Yeah.
Yeah, she gets the face on. She storms out and she's like, packs her stuff, ready to leave the academy. But then we're sort of seeing the first witchy moments.
Yeah.
Which are where Madame Blanc sort of like touches Susie's feet and hands, and they're kind of like glow. They kind of
It's like when your hands are cold, and like you know they've got blood in them, and then you press your fingers against them,
yeah,
and then you get like your finger marks, like pale marks. It's like that, but like doubled up. So she starts to do the dance, like the protagonist of the Volk dance.
Yeah, so Volk is the Academy's most well-known piece.
Yeah,
and I guess they need a lead. So was Chloe Moretz's character? Was she the lead previously?
She must have been, I guess. Yeah,
interesting. Very interesting. So she starts doing the dance, and then Olga, while she's trying to leave the Academy, ends up stumbling into or just walking into like this mirrored room.
It's like when you've gotten home after a few too many drinks.
Yep.
And you're sort of trying to find the toilet. Yes. And you're like leaking all over the floor. you know what I mean? Banging your head on the sink. It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah,
but this is like the most horrific thing I think I've seen in a good while. This is quite difficult to watch.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments where this was dodgy. So basically upstairs, we assume it is upstairs. Is it above the...
It's like a hidden room, isn't it?
She gets
lured in by voices.
So I think that I felt like the dancing was happening above and the mirrored room was below. That's what I kind of got the...
Yeah.
That's what I kind of felt.
Yeah.
So while Susie's kind of dancing and doing all her standard moves and stuff, her moves are being replicated by Olga, like, but she obviously doesn't want it to be...
Yeah, but like...
Against her will.
Yeah. And it kind of throws her around. She twists her... She's like being wrenched like a... like a crusty flannel. Like...
She's being wrenched around like a crusty flannel. I mean,
there's like, it's horrific. There's like juices squeezing out of her. There's, I don't know, she doesn't look like she's having a good time at all. It's like someone, like Susie's dancing was like the computer. It's like a dance game, and that's the computer on hard mode. And it's like Olga's first go on the game, and she doesn't even have controls yet.
and a load of legs are like getting snapped in all these directions.
Yeah.
Her body's getting contorted, and so it's pretty horrific. She gets thrown into the glass, and there's a particularly horrible sequence where she's thrown into the glass, and it's almost like her jaws like getting pulled.
Yeah.
Too far sideways, her teeth are coming out. She looks messed up.
Yeah, and Susie's doing the old Britney thing upstairs. Yeah.
The whole Britney thing. Yeah, and she kind of gets bent and contorted in ways that, you know, the human body shouldn't go. You hear bones going, this shit. At the one point, she's in a horrible position and, like, just pisses her pants.
Yeah. But at the end of it, like, she's just a heap of flesh mangled
there's
up.
There's loads of, she drools as well at one point. Yeah. Loads of horrible gunk comes out of her mouth.
Yeah, it's not... Well, yeah, it acts like stomach acid. I don't know what it is. I don't want to know. But... then all the witches, or like the teachers, just wander in with like hooks and just start like hooking her, and then they carry her away to God knows where.
Yeah, a bit harsh, isn't it?
Bit harsh, So, and that's fairly early in the film, I think.
So basically she looks like, imagine a woman lying in bed on her front, and then suddenly the bed is one of those folding ones that just folds in like that. Her in half the wrong way. That's pretty much
what happens to her. Yeah.
That's what happens to her. Yeah.
So I guess from here on out, she starts to spend time with.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Sarah starts to make friends with that one without eyebrows.
Yep. Yep.
And
Mia Goth's character.
Yeah. So I guess now it sort of follows her a bit. It follows Mia Goth's character a bit more because she starts to see the doctor, the psychiatrist, and.
Yep.
Because the psychiatrist is like, something's happened to my patient. He owes me. He's not paid. Or invoices.
Yeah.
So he's hunting her down, but he starts to sort of look into the dance academy a bit more. And then what? So Mia Goth, she does the whole counting steps thing, like she did in the original film.
Yeah. So she basically says that she's going to like investigate, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And she does like some counting steps thing and... find some like hidden chambers and rooms. I guess she does. Does she do the counting steps thing just based on what she can hear around the?
Yeah, I think she counts steps that she can hear at nighttime of the teachers going around, and then she follows them into the back room. Is that what? No, it's not yet. She goes back there a little later on to, and then finds.
Yeah, so there's like all these sort of like weird relics, various paintings on the wall of like Madame Blanc and like somebody else. Somebody else with like Elton John glasses on. So I don't think much sort of happens there. Around about a similar time, the witches kind of all vote for who they think should be their new leader, don't they?
Yeah.
Leader of the coven.
Coven?
So it's basically between Mother Marcos and Blanc, but Marcos basically gets voted in democracy over Blanc, and Blanc's fuming. she's absolutely Fred.
Yeah. And she's after Blancsit. She wants Blancsit. Marcos is there to remain. I can't get it to work.
Remain in the coven.
Yeah.
It's a clusterfuck, basically. So, yeah, they basically discuss the conspiracy to use Susie's body, basically, as a host body for Marcos.
Yeah.
Because she's old and withered.
Smelly.
And smelly. And then there's also another moment where one of the witches just stabs herself in the throat during a meal, doesn't she?
Is that because she doesn't want that to happen? She's like, I like Susie as well.
I like Susie. I've only met her once, but she's got some cracking moves. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to stab myself in throat.
Yeah.
And she just stabs herself in the throat.
That was
pretty horrific. I was fine when these things happen in films, you know, when people commit suicide by just like shanking someone into their skin. Yeah. I was like, no, I'd probably just do a little one first.
Test it out first. Test the water.
Yeah, test it out. And you go, nah, I don't really want to do that. I don't really want it.
Yeah, it's not a smart way. I mean,
no.
You do it once and be like, oh, I can't carry on. Yeah. And then you're like, now you're just in pain and bleeding. It's like, I have to go to the emergency room now. Bloody hell.
So around about this time, Susie is getting pretty close with Madame Blanc. Like, they're spending time together. Yeah. She's coming and chilling in her room and playing Mario Kart with her.
Yeah.
They're just spending a lot of time together, talking to each other. And I guess she's trying to get close to her in order to gain her trust and manipulate her in some way. Doesn't obviously tell her, I want your body.
Yeah. And at the same time, she's having like weird dreams, like really horrific visual like tone poems of blood and bases. And
I watch some of these dream sequences. There's so many shots and I just think everything that must have gone into that. Some shots where there's like dozens and dozens and dozens of like these horrific visuals.
Yeah. Like special effects, like looking stuff as well. So not like just a shot of a person, but a person floating or doing something crazy.
Yeah.
It is visually pretty amazing. So it's now they get to, I think maybe in the third act now. And they do the vault performance wearing the red pajamas, like the red frilly pajamas.
Yeah, it's like red pajamas with like loads of like climbing string, climbing ropes hanging off of them. Like they've gone to scale a sheer wall mountain, and they've fallen down, and then they've gone.
And then they've gone straight to the show.
Straight to the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Volk music, the Volk dance itself, is pretty amazing. But
what I like the most about it is that they're breathing. Like everybody's sort of like. You could sort of hear everyone's sort of like heavy breathing, and it was almost like in unison. I thought that was really good. I thought that kind of added a certain rhythm to the dance that the music perhaps didn't provide.
Yeah, because the music wasn't particularly overpowering or anything at that point. It's just mainly the breathing and the slapping of feet.
And the slapping of limbs.
Against the hardwood floor. It was, you know, like a school PE session.
Yeah, it did feel like that.
Yeah.
But, bloody hell, is it lunchtime yet?
Yeah. So Mia Goth is sort of back in the hidden rooms doing some research, and she stumbles across Patricia, Chloe Grace Moretz, from the start of the film. She never escaped, but she's, I think they're like zapping her life energy or something. She looks like she's turning into a bit a tree.
A tree or a blob. Yeah. She's like, she's all grey and mugged off. And I think Mia's trying to like help her escape at one point, isn't she? But then there like some sort of weird,
there's something else
disfigured
in there.
Thing in there.
Yeah.
Something with like no arms and legs, sort of like crawling towards you. You don't really focus on it too much.
I thought that might have been another dancer or something, because I thought that was someone else that they'd been doing the same thing.
Yeah, thing too. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that could be, potentially could be that.
Who knows?
So Mia Goth, what is Mia Goth's character's name?
Sarah. We've got a Susie and a Sarah.
Susie and Sarah. So Sarah sort of runs out and then she like collapses. I think she like her legs just kind of like snap.
Yeah. So what happens? So the spell with the dance, the Volk dance, it opens up little holes in the floor. Like you get like these little holes pop up, and then Mia steps in one and breaks her leg. Like,
it was just bad horrific maintenance.
Yeah.
But needed to get DIY SOS in.
Yeah. But they shouldn't have, because she breaks the leg and it's like horrifically bad. Bones,
she's like,
out.
Ow! Oh, that stings!
Bloody Nora. God, I get it.
Oh, yeah.
So, But the witches come and they sort of patch her over quickly. And then he put a spell on her or something. They kind of
touch her leg and then suddenly it's not broken anymore. I was like, what's the point of bloody breaking it in the first place?
Well, it's broken, isn't it? But it's under the skin. Like they heal over it.
Yeah, so then she's like under a spell. Her eyes are kind of like a bit misty, murky, milky.
Yeah.
And she goes and joins in the dance, but she's proper attention seeking during, ain't she? She's going a bit OTT, collapses.
They don't finish the dance, do they? I think they don't finish the spell, whatever they were trying to do.
Clempora, how do you say his name? The psychiatrist, aka Tilda Swinton with a prosthetic penis, jumps up and he's really shocked and like, what's going on here? He attends the performance for some reason. I reckon he just loves dance.
Yeah. He starts doing the thing.
And he does the worm down the middle of the... towards them all. Look, and they go, me. God, this... Can I join the troupe?
And everyone like, follows... Women only! All the audience follow him out into the street and they're all doing the dancing.
Yeah.
And the ballerinas or the dancers are inside the class like, oh, we lost them. The Klempora. Isn't that like a kind of Japanese food?
Yeah. I love a bit of Klempora.
Yeah.
So, we get a lot of him sort of wandering around in the snow, and then he returns to like a house that he used to live in.
Yeah.
And then like his wife turns up, who I think he presumed was dead for some reason. Is that right? She faked her death.
So I didn't know what was much happening here until I watched a couple of these YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So he thinks that she fled the country at some point. A while ago.
Started a
new
life.
He thinks that she's alive somewhere. He doesn't know where or what she's doing. But every day, whenever he goes back to this house, and then she's suddenly there. And it's played by the Jessica Harper, who played...
Yeah, the original...
Suspiria woman.
Which is, I mean, that's a lovely touch, right?
I like it, yeah. And I think she plays it really, she does it perfectly as well.
It's good. It's not too obvious. Like, it could have been... They could have made her, like, one of the witches or...
Yeah.
Or like another major character, but the fact a character that didn't exist in the original film either.
I think we were going to say that it doesn't really exist in this film either, because she's almost like a trick of the imagination. And that kind of adds to the fact that she's from a film, like she doesn't really exist in this film to us either. Like she's just a trick of the imagination. Because they're using her to lure Klempora into the academy, because he doesn't even know he's walking there, I don't think.
No.
Like they just walk in, suddenly, and he's like, oh, I'm inside the dance thing. And there's a woman
He was in the academy before, watching the show.
Yeah, they just kept him. They should have locked the door.
Yeah, they should have locked the door. Don't let him leave.
Yeah, tie his shoelaces together.
They're like, we're going to have to create an illusion now to get him back. It's like, he's here right now. Get him now.
That's a lot of effort to go to get him back. Yeah.
Maybe they're like, we can't.
It's because he wormed all the way out of the dance, and they're like, oh.
They couldn't. Someone tried to grab him at the exact moment.
Yeah.
This is pretty freaky because he stood outside the dance thing, and like two of the witches just run towards him. One of them just like screaming at him.
She's like cackling, like proper witch. Yeah. And then
catch me off guard. I'd be like, shit.
He doesn't just run away. They go this way. Come on inside. They offer him a Pepsi Max, and he's like takes it and he walks in. It's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a multi-pack can.
So then we get like this is building to, like the final, like the bit where I was kind of watching TV, like what is going on? Because it suddenly takes a turn for extreme craziness. Like it's been kind of like, subtle most of the way, but then this is just like
craziness, unbelievable, like gore.
Yeah.
Just pretty much madness. So Susie like returns to the academy, and she's led to this. There's like a ritual taking place in the middle of this like chamber.
Yeah.
So they've got like Klempora captured, naked, lying at the top of this plinth.
He's the witness or something like that.
The witness, Marcos herself, like the queen witch. Well, can't say queen, but the head witch. What word am I thinking? The main. The big kahuna, but she's all like Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah, she is, yeah. With sunglasses. With like Ray, what's his name? Ray Davis. Ray? What's his name? The blues singer.
Ray.
What's Ray his Charles? Name? Ray Charles, yeah. Ray Charles sunglasses.
Ray Charles' sunglasses. She got cataracts, I reckon.
Which, again, I think that's a nice little nod to the original. I'm sure the blind piano teacher wears those sort of things, doesn't he? Maybe I've made that up. And all the dancers. I don't know what the difference is. They're all nude, shaking what God gave them.
There's a lot of it's a very like ritualistic sort of. It looks like they're offering someone up.
Yeah.
And you know, some of them begin to disembowel Sarah as well to begin this ritual or this Sabbath as such. Yeah. It's very satanic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So Madame Blanc is like, no, I don't think we should do it. But Susie's like, yeah, I'm up for this. I'm happy to give my heart to, you know.
Yeah. So Marcos. It seems like, so Susie's been, you know, manipulated, and she's probably not quite herself, perhaps in a bit of a trance. And that's why she's willing to give herself up to the witches. But Madame Blanc has a change of heart, whether she's feels something for Susie, perhaps, or you know, doesn't want it to happen this way. Maybe she wants to be the head of the coven, and that's why she sees this as being the final moment. If this happens, she'll never have a chance.
I read it as that she just kind of likes Susie now, because they spent some time. I think she just likes her likes something about her. But then, as she protests, Marcos like, she's like a weird, like a
weird karate chop, telekinetic karate chop.
Yeah,
that like kind of half decapitates Madame Blanc from the back of her neck.
Yeah,
and there's, you know, blood. This is, I mean, there's a lot of red hues in the light in here, but it's almost like any blood is like almost pure black.
Yeah,
and very gushy.
Jets out.
Yeah.
So it's all going quite well for Marcos. All like it's going to plan, and then like another witch demon thing just rocks up to the party that no one asked for.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming Susie summoned this incarnation of whatever it is. So it almost looks like, you know, Samara from The Ring. That's her name, isn't it?
But like a skeleton-y, face.
Weird, horrible, hairy, black. And you never, and the sort of way everything's filmed goes a bit weird and a bit juddery and.
Yeah.
What effect is that?
It's like a long exposure, isn't it? So everything starts to fade. Yeah. Into each other, and then the thing goes around the room like, you voted for Marcos, did you? Dead.
Yeah,
you voted for Marcos. Dead. Not dead.
You voted for the Brexit, did you? Well, you're dead.
It's definitely about Brexit, this film. And
lots of undertones.
Yeah,
Brexit. The fact it's in Berlin, 1977. But basically, how he kills people is how this deaf version, whatever this is, which kills people, he kind of just points at people and they kind of just explode in this horrible plume of gore.
Yeah. That winks. And,
obviously it kills Marcos as well.
Yeah.
Kind of melts her into a blob.
Yeah. Well, she deserved it, to be perfectly frank. And then.
Who's Frank?
Don't know. If he's perfect. And then she offers death to the Mia Goth character and Patricia, who obviously dead already in a way, but they're just not allowed to die properly.
Yeah. So basically grants them death, doesn't they? Yeah. Doesn't she? Susie does. So what we're led to believe at this stage is that Susie is somehow either actually Mater Suspiriorum, or she's possessed by her in some way. But she's there to claim the Academy, rid Marcos of everything.
Yeah.
And trying to kind of grant some sort of balance back to the Dance Academy.
So in one of the videos I watched, which I don't know if this is correct or not, but it might be the guy's theory, is that her mother was Mother Suspiriorum. Because you get those like looks at her, but it all seemed very flashbacky and I don't know, it didn't seem very solid. Like, I don't know if you could get solid plot points out of those flashbacks. But she peels her like chest open and it's just all black inside, and then she's like, look
at my chest.
And
very vagina like when she opens her chest.
Yeah
My fault. I mean, not that I've ever seen one, but it was very vagina like
books.
It was almost like I've read books on anatomy and stuff. It was very vagina like so whether there's what kind of, you know, in terms of vision, in terms of
vaginal.
Virginity.
Yeah.
In terms of what that represents as like a visionary thing, or I don't know.
And then Tom York's face, P. peers out, and he sings.
If you
like
zoom right in,
song.
He goes, "This is the love," and he starts spinning around on the spot. It also, obviously, yeah. There is a Thom Yorke song playing when this all kicks off.
Yeah,
Which I thought, you know, essentially, it's very sort of like, it's not horror. Again, it's not horror music. It's quite soothing in a way.
Weirdly soothing.
It's very, it's very like dreamy and
yeah. So that all ends. She's the head of the witch school now. She's
I'm the head of the witch school, bitches.
Yeah. How you like me now? And then she's doing singing, you know, doing all that stuff. And then we have like an epilogue chapter where she goes to see Kalempura, and then she says, look, the truth is, your wife, she was in a concentration camp. She never got out of the... She forgot some papers or something. Forgot a passport.
Yeah, so she forgot some papers and was made to sort of like stand out in the cold with thousands of other, you know, people who were in the concentration camp, and basically just froze to death. But she didn't, even though she died cold, she didn't die
alone.
In pain and sad.
Like, yeah, Chris wasn't alone.
Thousands of them. And she was thinking about Kalempura and a time when, you know, I think when he went out on the piss or something.
Yeah. But then she's told him that and he's not happy. And then she's like, Command Z, like undoes it, like pressing his head. And then he has a little fit and he doesn't remember anything. I'm not too sure why she would tell him that.
Yeah, why tell him and then erase his memory?
Because it just gives him like a little moment of
sadness. He kind of cries.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But maybe by telling him and doing the witchery on him, he just won't worry about it anymore or won't think about it. I don't know. Maybe he won't have to go back to that house anymore to
erase his memory, so he's got no connection to that anymore, so he doesn't need to go back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he might linger and he might want to watch some more dancing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So that's the end of the film. And it fades out to black or something. Some trivia. You ready?
It kind of fades out to like beige. Like the end credits were like all on this sort of like beige thing, and all like the text was kind of wonky.
Yeah. I love the text.
Text was great. Yeah. I think the art direction was really good, and sort of everything that accompanied the film, I think, was spot on.
Yeah, really spot on, yeah.
Because they could have just tried to recreate stuff from the original.
I'm glad
they
didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't as well. So, yeah, good stuff.
Trivia, you ready?
Yeah.
Number one, how many years of ballet training did Dakota Johnson take for this role?
How many years?
Yep. More than one.
One?
Well, it's more than one, I said.
Oh, did you say it's more than one? It's more than one. One. Two?
Yes, two. She took two years of ballet dancing school.
Any more than that would be mental, right?
For one film, yeah. Unless you just liked it. You know. So here's an interesting one. So number two, who was originally set to star in the remake?
What, as the lead or?
As Susie.
Oh, God, I kind of feel like I know this, but I've kind of forgotten. So let me just say, Jennifer Lopez.
Natalie Portman.
Oh, well, that'd be typecasting then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
How could she play that part any differently, really?
She'd still be wearing the makeup from Black Swan.
She'd be wearing the makeup. Yeah. She'd have the Oscar in one hand.
Yeah. Here's another interesting one. Number three, who was set to direct the film originally?
Was it, I think I read this somewhere, was it David Gordon Green?
It was David Gordon Green who directed Halloween in 2018.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously possibly would have been a very different take on it. Would it perhaps have been a more Americanized version of this story? I'm glad they kind of kept, they didn't make it more Americanized. They really did focus on that sort of European.
Yeah, definitely.
Weirdness.
Yeah, European cinema sort of feel to it. Okay, number four. As well as acting as three different characters, Tilda Swinton was actually up for a world record attempt to drink the most water in under an hour. She bottled it. That wasn't a question. That was just a cheeky joke.
I wonder what you're
going to
say. You're going to say, as well as playing three parts, she also did the catering and just like loads of other shit.
Yeah, that wasn't a question. It's just a joke. Just a chance to get a pun in there. So, number five. You got that right, though. Number five. Who in this film is the queen of horror movie remakes?
Is it Chloe? It's Chloe Moretz, isn't it?
Yeah, she's been in the
Carrie.
Yep.
Any more? Are there any more?
The Amityville Horror.
Okay.
And Dark Shadows. Is the remake of the TV show.
She bloody loves it, doesn't she, mate? Get your own film.
So, we need to rate the film. Do you rate it rate good or rate bad?
I reckon it's rate good, to be fair. I think it's I'm glad that it's very different to the original. I think it brings a whole new... It's hard to compare them, I think. I've heard Dario Argento wasn't a fan of this, I read.
He said it goes against what the original stood for. I don't think that even makes sense as a sentence.
I mean, come on. I mean, it is how many years later is it?
41 years. 41 years.
Yeah, I mean, 41, 42 years.
It's supposed to make the exact same film. It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. It's a different time, and I think it did really well. It could have recreated the music, it could have recreated the visuals, it could have recreated everything, but it wasn't afraid to stand on its own. Yeah. I think the cast is great. I think it's a great looking film. And I felt really, drawn in by it. I felt slowly drawn in.
The fact that they're so different makes me sort of more willing to sort of just watch the original. This is with you. So if I'm going to watch The Hills of Eyes, I will naturally go to the remake because that's the first one I watched. And that's kind of a big one for me. Whereas the original doesn't hold the same sway. But for this, I could quite happily go to either or. Like, could they both different to the point of I can get different things from either of them?
100%. Yeah. So with that being said, I'd be happy to give this film an A.
Woo! Oh, Nelly.
I'm not going for an A plus. All right, I'll go for A.
Okay. I was going to go for a B plus because it's brilliant, like better than brilliant, but not awesome. That's what they stand for, right?
Luke Gondor. Better than brilliant, but not awesome.
Why not? Also, my B plus is relevant because the film we're doing next week is Brain Dead.
Oh, there we go. Nice segue there.
Yep. So next week we're doing Brain Dead, aka Dead Alive. I've never seen it before, and it's one of those ones where apparently you have to see it.
I've never seen it before either.
Really?
So it's going to be brand new for both of us. Yeah, so we're carrying on with the IGN Top 100 list. Not sure what number this is.
96 or 97-ish?
Somewhere like that. I think, we're not somewhere like that. who's counted? Someone is. Probably us. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it because I've heard it's like ridiculously gory. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen plenty of little snippets from it.
Yeah. How does it make you feel?
Aroused.
Oh!
Hungry, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, hungry. Peter Jackson as well.
It makes me want to take a ring to Mordor. I don't know. That's good.
Who were?
So, I know you've got to get off, and I know I'm cold. So,
yeah, there we go. It's been a pleasure.
So, before Ben gets off, this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovach Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. Remember to give us a rating and review on iTunes. And remember to hit subscribe. And thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being a right honour dude.
Thank you very much, Luke. It's been a pleasure as always. Bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.